Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm Bits.
And we are on season 10, episode 9 of Top Chef.
This was a good one. We got a lot of guests today.
We got a lot going on today. And we are the winners of the Clean Plate Club because we have no leftovers.
Nice. Go us.
I think I like the phrase Clean Plate Club, mm-hmm. but we don't have to count it.
No, yeah. We can just celebrate it when it
exactly.
happens. Yeah, love that.
The way our parents did when we were young.
My goodness. So, yeah, no leftovers. This one, another great episode. This season rules.
This season rules. So let's just begin.
Okay, amuse-bouche reactions, Nancy, to episode 9.
Oh, this was fun on so many levels, primarily because it had so much Top Chef lore that was fabulous, but also like jam-packed. We got not one, not two, but three cook-offs.
A lot of cook-offs. A lot of like knockout, big knockout vibes this episode.
Yes.
Yeah, this episode also had me lolling, like, out loud. There was a lot of zingers from the crowd, from the chefs. Very funny. We got Wiley Dufresne, which
is my
absolute favorite.
And we got Wolfgang Puck.
Yes, he's back. They, like, low-key had, like, a stacked table. Who was the third guy?
I think Waxman, whose first name I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, right. Jonathan Waxman. And
yes,
Chris Constantino.
Waxman. Yeah.
So, like, out of nowhere, they decide to invite for sort of the elimination challenge that is, like, make a bland version of this stuff.
Yeah.
We'll get into all that, but I thought it was an interesting episode to like bring all these people back for.
It was a heavy hitting judging panel. Like, really?
Yeah.
These are some. Everyone walked up to the table and was like, holy
shit. And they definitely didn't have any idea beforehand. It didn't seem
no
like.
Clue. Yeah, normally when they have this. Okay, we'll get to it. My gosh, why don't we just start? What's your amuse-bouche?
That was it. It was just a lot of good zingers. Yeah, but let's go quickfire. Tell us about the quickfire.
I'm obsessed with this quickfire. Like, the quickfires this season are so good. Like, I could watch a whole season of quickfires, of season 10 style quickfires. Okay. So, as we all know, something I love about quick – or something that I love to see is, like, when super secret, like, ninja chef skills come out.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, did we have them in this quickfire because we have Bob Kramer, a master bladesmith, in the room. I don't really know much about Bob Kramer other than what he said on the show, which is he was a chef and then he fell in love with knives. And he has now gone on to become an artisan knife maker, and his knives go for thousands of dollars for, like, a simple chef's knife. And that's
crazy.
Just the base package.
Slaps.
I kind of want to look up, you know what, a leftover for next week is I'm going to like go on Bob Kramer's website and just like see how much it costs to get like a knife from him.
Love that.
Okay. So anyway, he comes and he says like, you know, knives are an extension of our hands, yada, yada, yada. And so this is a knife skills challenge. Do you want to tell us about how this went down, Bits?
Yeah. Okay. This was wild. It was sort of like a knife mise challenge.
Yes.
So that there was three rounds. The chefs divided into three teams. And the first round was that each of the chefs had to sharpen a knife such that it was sharp enough to slice a piece of paper. Whichever two teams finished that challenge first moved on to the second round, which was a sort of precision challenge. They needed to tournay 50 potatoes. And then whichever team won that challenge moved on to the final round, during which the three folks on the team would then compete against each other to break down and basically butcher a rack of two rabbits. So this one was, man, this group is testy. Let's get into it because the first round we see John is just like chomping at the bit.
Yes.
Champing at the bit, as we established in an
champing.
Earlier season.
So the teams are, we have the red team, which is John, Kristen, and Josie. We have the blue team, which is Sheldon, Micah, and Josh. And we have the green team, Stefan, Lizzie, and Brooke. Dude, my first note here is I bet Stefan was salivating when he saw those potatoes.
He's like, I know a thing or two about potatoes.
He's like, I've been making potatoes all season. I can do this with my eyes shut. Oh, another thing we need to note is part of the rules, at any point while your team is still in the running, if you nick yourself like or cut yourself or anything, even the tiniest one, you are eliminated or you're disqualified and your team goes on without you, which I thought was like a really cool part of this.
Agree.
Oh, my God. Just – oh, I love
first to
so
draw
much.
Blood.
First to draw blood. So anyway, they're sharpening their knives to cut paper, which is essentially they have like a steel block that they put water on and they have to like use friction and like straight straight lines to sharpen their knives. And they're going. And John is getting like super anxious and he's like, we gotta go. And Kristen keeps saying, like, my knife isn't sharp enough. I can't go yet. Don't call time. And of course, John calls check.
God. Oh, the best part though is Josie's knife goes through the paper. Kristen's knife goes through the paper. John's knife does not go
through the paper. It's like, great. 'Twas hubris, my guy.
Oh my God. But we should say that the Brooks team actually called first and Brooks' knife wasn't sharp enough. So then they had to kind of go back to it. So then we had like the Kristen, John, Josie crew did a second check. Then they checked again right after. It works. Cool. They move on to the next round.
Yep.
And then we see the Josh, Micah, Sheldon team move through with them as well. And the Brooke, Lizzie, Stefan are out in round one.
Yep. So next, they are tourneying potatoes. And I think this is, as they all say, like something that they could do in their sleep as young chefs. They do this hundreds of times a day. But they normally do it with a paring knife. They're doing this with a chef's knife, which is it's a much bigger knife and definitely less graceful in its cuts. And so you're seeing them definitely struggling a little bit, but they're all like on fire. They're just
Micah that made the comment about John just being like absolute unit at it. Josie unfortunately nicks herself, so she's out. So then it's sort of down to like Kristen and John to try to get their team through the round. Mm-hmm. They lose by two potatoes to Josh, Micah, Sheldon.
I wasn't sad to see John lose, but I was sad to see Kristen lose.
Yeah.
And it also by two potatoes, like what a
I was willing to let Kristen lose for the satisfaction of John losing, to be honest.
Yes, I completely
agree.
It was agree.
More than worth it. Sorry.
So now for your loss, Sheldon, Kristen. Micah, and Josh have to compete against each other to butcher rabbits. And the funniest is Sheldon's like, I've never butchered a rabbit before. And Josh goes, it's just like a cat. As if that's supposed to help.
Yeah. Sheldon's talking head about that was pretty good. He's like, hey man, if that helps him out, great. Doesn't help me out much. It's like, yeah, what was the end game of that?
We need a follow-up on when Josh has butchered a cat and why. Maybe he's like those people who did Frog kidding. Club. Didn't the Frog Club people who own the restaurant horses like kill cats or something at their restaurant?
Yeah, right. We talked about that on the LA Food Pod. Tune in. But I was really bummed Sheldon didn't win this. He was like obviously fangirling really hard at this knife dude.
Micah takes it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, this really was the first challenge that we've seen really dialed in on the technical.
Yes, like, they didn't even have to cook. Yeah. I think that's what I loved. It was like, no, something that's fascinating about chefs is, like, all the shit that goes into the final product that we as consumers get. So, like, focusing entirely on the prep was deeply fascinating to me. And I love that Micah was like, I just went into, like, a zen space and butchered some rabbits.
And he wins.
And he wins. He wins the knife. I was annoyed that they didn't show us the knife that he won.
Yeah.
Like, they show him unzipping the case, but not the knife.
Yeah. Show us your goods.
Show us your artisan knife. Anyway, okay. So that is the last that we see of Bob Kramer. So let's move on to the elimination challenge. We have the return of the Kindle Fire.
It is back. Oh, my God. I loved it.
I missed it.
I missed it too. I was hoping that they could do a bit more research while we watched them. So as Nancy alluded to, the challenge this week, the chefs, this is also a $15,000 challenge. So Micah wins immunity from the quick fire. So he's feeling good moving into this. Yes, furnished by Healthy Choice. So each of the chefs are assigned a memorable moment from a previous Top Chef season in celebration of 10 years of Top Chef. The winner will also inspire a Top Chef Healthy Choice frozen meal. But before we get to that, they have to cook a healthy version of a memorable moment from a past season for a room full of Top Chef superfans. Let's talk about some of these memorable moments. It's pretty fun. Some of these I've actually don't know how memorable they were.
Yeah.
But maybe just because I didn't remember them.
Some seasons are admittedly not as memorable as others.
True.
But I mean, some of these are like iconic Top Chef lore. And the thing that me as like an 8-year-old watching this show was like, oh my God. I also need to. I'm not your bitch, bitch. I mean, that. I think so. Let's see. I was born in 1994. And I was 10 when Top Chef started.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, they said bitch on television? That's incredible.
They're bad.
But yes. Okay. So season one's memorable episode is the I'm not your bitch, bitch line.
Yep.
Which really kicked up. Okay. The other thing that a lot of these moments made me realize, because a lot of them are like lines said in the heat of the moment, is we've been saying like, wow, season 10 is a really contentious season. And I'm kind of remembering that like there was a lot of fighting in early seasons of Top Chef. Like all of these seasons are very contentious, and like they definitely leaned into the like egomaniac John Tizar style chef.
Yeah.
I also think that in general, that was an archetype of chef that was way more common and prevalent then than it is now.
Right, right. Yeah, The visual that I really love before we even get into the so we go back to the apartment and all the chefs are watching on their Amazon Kindle Fires while, you know, someone's in the kitchen heating up the healthy choices for dinner. And they're like, hey, which one can I get you? It was just like double duty product placement. But it made me laugh that they were all eating their TV dinners while watching their Amazon Kindle Fires by themselves.
In general, I mean, you know I love a product placement challenge. Reynolds Wrap is going down in history for me as the best product placement challenge of all time. But when they force the chefs – like, it's one thing when they make a challenge out of it. But when they force the chefs to, like, repeat lines, it is so cringy.
Yes.
Like, wow, this Prius is cool. Also, like – clearly, Top Chef has leveled up because now it's BMW. And it's like, look at this BMW self-activating fire feature.
Yeah. Fire feature.
Sorry, that's actually fire. Just Tesla Cybertrucks. But anyway, all to say, this was just a delight. And the other cool thing was that a few of the All-Stars were there for the moments. Josie was like, I was there for that.
Yeah, that is bonkers to me. Yeah, that's kind of fun. Did they randomly – it seemed like production picked the challenge that these people got.
Oh, you think each individual chef got, like, chosen?
I thought
that they just picked randomly out of, like, a pile of five.
Oh, maybe they did. Maybe they did. I don't know. Some of them just, like, felt – oh, no, because Josie didn't – Josie got I'm Not Your Bitch, Bitch. Stefan got Josie's season moment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Okay. I'm realizing this. So, yeah.
I think it was a random draw.
Yeah, season two, we had the Marcel and Betty grilled cheese sandwich drama. I'm not familiar with this.
It's been a long time. But yeah, they were definitely at each other's throats. And it had – the original dish had bacon, but the dish that Stefan executed did not. So it doesn't – we had
– no, he did have bacon.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he – because he made the point of saying like, I flavored it only with the lean part of the bacon. So we had a bacon in this one.
Okay. I was going to say, we have yet to have a clean plate club on the counters this season. Every episode has at least something in the counter, which is how it should be. But anyway, yeah, so season three, risotto, the kiss of death. It was funny that they put a risotto in there.
It was funny.
It was pretty fucked up that they put a risotto in there.
Yeah, but he was all like, oh, he was like giddy about it. So
yeah, I was happy that John Tesar got the risotto because he like.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why some of this felt like too good to be true as far as like production, like who picked what. But
maybe, I think
maybe just the fates were on our side for this
one. Yeah, they just aligned.
Yeah, he did a risotto with chicken, salmon roe, burdock root, and carrot emulsion.
There was so much going on in this risotto.
Yeah, yeah.
Too much.
I don't know.
Wait, should we – I think that we actually, like, haven't really talked about the dishes that either Josie or Stefan made. Should we go back and just
– Yeah, yeah. Let's rewind the tapes.
Yeah.
Let's – so – but to continue on the John quick before doubling back.
Yeah.
We get a little soundbite that he apparently introduced Anthony Bourdain to Eric Repair.
Yes.
Allegedly. I did a quick like search on this relationship. He is in fact mentioned in Anthony Bourdain's book. I don't know like how much I know at the end of Anthony Bourdain's life they were not speaking. Because he said some rude shit to Anthony Bourdain, and Anthony Bourdain was probably like, yo, fuck you. Like,
I think that this gets, we spoke about this a little bit, but like, John came up with all these huge, huge names. Like, Anthony Bourdain, Eric Repair, it doesn't get any bigger than that.
Who are like, sort of like arguably like nice guys. Like, they're rough, you know, Eric Repair, I wouldn't say is rough around the edges, but like, Anthony Bourdain is, but like, that, I think that that's like a core character trait.
Yeah,
that, and I think has withstood him even after death.
Yes, absolutely. These are men who are of like great accomplishment. So everyone's like, okay, clearly to get to where they are, they had to like, maybe not like throw an elbow, but they had to be really cutthroat and like really single-minded to get to where they are, which, you know, can sometimes rub people the wrong way. But Eric Repair, we always say whenever he's on the show, like, is such a sweetheart.
Such a joy.
And Anthony Bourdain famously like had a soft side.
Yeah.
So, and I think that John Tesar was like miming what he thought these great chefs were, i.e. like their outward appearance of like being an asshole and being cutthroat and being aggressive. But he didn't have that soft side underneath. He was just pretending to be like the big boys.
Yeah.
Which landed him in a lot of trouble because he didn't know when to just like shut up and recognize who are your friends.
He also said that Anthony Bourdain was a shitty chef, which is sort of why Anthony was like cut him out.
He clearly is very insecure and like does stupid things as a result of that.
It was like weird. He was like particularly on one later this episode, which we can talk about. But
yes, all right, yes. Okay, so let's talk about his dish. He keeps complaining there are no flat-bottomed pans entire kitchen, so there's no way my rice can be cooked properly.
I'm not gonna complain. I wish he would pick things to complain about that weren't also a handicap for everybody else he's competing against.
Yes.
Like, you couldn't have picked something. Okay, so, but everybody then is hampered by that. I don't know. It's every episode.
Every single episode. And, like, the rice was cooked evenly, which is obviously a huge point of critique for any risotto, but I also think they were like, there's too much shit in this. Like,
there's shit in it, but they also said some of the rice was over and under at the same time somehow.
Exactly.
So I don't know. He just kind of doo-dooed all over that. Yeah.
He really did. Okay, but let's go back to Josie. So Josie had to imitate a roast chicken with parsnip puree, which is exactly what she did. The critique there, they were like, this is a chicken dish that you could get in a very standard restaurant.
Yeah, it didn't look good either. It was a very monochromatic.
Yeah, didn't look nice. And I love chicken, but I probably could have made that chicken.
Yes, agreed.
Okay, so Stefan made a grilled cheese and a red pepper soup. This was a surprising L for Stefan.
Yeah. This was the moment when, you know, we first take in the guest judges also, and he's sweating it hard because he's realizing he made a grilled cheese for all these people. I thought it was fun. I don't know. It's fun to kind of see him on the back foot for a minute. He's not like a whiny bitch when he's like in the bottom, which is always enjoyable. He is sort of just, oh man,
Yeah, in his own way, he takes accountability for his mistakes. It's not like, it's not Sheldon in like this very honorable way, but he does not make excuses the way John Tesar does, and he recognizes it. Like he's not embarrassed. Maybe he's embarrassed, but he's not afraid to admit that he's like done something wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And pretty much the critique here was just it was like so greasy. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, someone was polite about it. They were like, there's so much oil. You can see it oozing out. And Wiley Dufresne is like, I'd say this is greasy. Like, let's just call a spade a spade.
There's a word
here
for that. Yeah.
And it's grease.
Oh, but honestly, of all of these, that's what I want right now.
A grilled
cheese. Though we're having Italian for lunch, that sounds good.
Grilled cheese, tomato soup. I know it's red pepper soup, but like, manzo beet tomato. Oh, it's one of the best combinations. Yeah. On the planet
I might make
Earth.
Grilled cheese and tomato soup tomorrow for my birthday. I think that's what I want.
Oh, what a special birthday
Isn't
lunch.
Isn't that a good idea? I'll get some good cheese. Or should I get bad cheese? I got to think about it. I'll think about it.
I would go, don't do American, but don't do like fancy. Like do a nice cheddar is what I would say.
Yeah.
You could do a mix of cheeses, but I would say like you don't have to spend a lot of money on the cheese, but don't do like drugstore cheese.
Yeah, I need it to melt well. I honestly might do a mix of maybe a mix of like Cooper and cheddar or American. I do like American though. Okay.
I mean, American is a classic. You know, my trick on the grilled cheese, if you're American melts like really quickly. It's literally chemically designed to melt like that. But cheddar doesn't necessarily. And so what I do is I actually open face it in the pan. So I'll take like 2 pieces of bread. I'll put my cheese on top. I'll butter, you know, the sides of the bread, whatever. Put it in the hot pan and then put a – like not too hot of a heat, like medium.
Yeah.
Put a lid on it so the cheese melts.
S'more.
For a little bit. And then once you see the cheese starting to melt, then you sandwich it together and like cook on high heat on both sides.
Very smart. Okay. I'm going to give it a shot.
That's my grilled cheese. If I do that. For ya. But anyway, yes. Okay. So then we've talked about John, his season 3 risotto. So let's talk about season 4. Sheldon, I don't remember this beef carpaccio, if I'm being honest.
No, me neither. But wow, that was a stew room throwdown, hoedown.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. He got like a pretty big fight for being Sheldon, you know?
I know.
That was funny.
And that's what made me realize like, oh, they've always fought aggressively in the stew room. Like that's the point.
I was, judges weren't really a fan. They liked what he did with the candied salmon, but the tofu didn't have any flavor, wasn't eye appealing. I was surprised he wasn't on the bottom, to be honest.
Me too. I was
relieved.
They
were kind of ragging on it. Yeah, for sure.
They pretty much didn't like any component. It seems like his knife skills weren't good. The tofu wasn't good. Amazing that he used candy salmon after all that.
Yeah. I love that. I like to think that he like has taken that back to his kitchen and uses it all the time now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's from Hawaii. He talks like – I mean, there's an episode, maybe it's in his All-Star season when he like has to cook with Spam and he's like, I fucking got this. Like,
yeah, I love
Spam
that
Spam is huge in Hawaii. It's possible the candied salmon is big in Hawaii and like –
yeah, it makes sense. Shelf stable.
So anyway, his dish is not that great. Unfortunately.
And then we get to sort of the 5 golden rings of the memorable Top Chef moments in season 5 Top Scallop. This is, to me, peak memory.
Yes. It's not Top Chef. This is not Top Chef. It's Top Scallop.
Yeah. Well, it's not Top Scallop.
Sorry. Oh, fuck.
But see, that's the thing. It's not.
It's not Top
All to say, though, if you haven't listened, we actually interviewed Jamie Lauren on the pod last season. It was a super fun interview because she's now the head of the culinary production for the show. So she like stocks the kitchen for the challenges, for the stocks all the supplies the chefs use. Yeah, it was a really fascinating episode. Obviously, I'm biased.
Some of the coolest BTS for super fans out there, like it's some of this stuff is gonna blow your mind.
Yeah,
around like
super
how they film
also.
The dishes. Yeah, she's so nice. We asked if she wanted to talk about Top Scallop, and we were not gonna bring it up because we know it's a little sensitive. And then she brought it up, not for too long. She didn't really address it that much. But you know,
what she said was totally reasonable. She basically like the long and short of it was, you know, you often don't have a lot of time. It's the reason, you know, and Jen Carroll said something similar. It's the reason why you see so many crudos, so many ceviches. Like, it's the reason why scallops are easy because they cook quickly and they're an easy protein to work with. Unfortunately, fast forwarding to season 10, Lizzie had the season 5 top scallop moment. So at first she's like really jazzed about it because she's like, oh, this is they're already healthy by default.
Yep.
They're easy enough to cook. And then she really pretty quickly falls into kind of like problem after problem after problem.
Yes. So she opens up her scallops the day after purchasing them and she's like, I can immediately smell that these are not good. Ugh. I have so many questions about this. Like,
yeah.
And I clearly, because this has happened on a few seasons where like fish has gone bad. I think in season 6, this happens at like the Cowboy Challenge or something when they have to like camp out.
That one, yeah.
Or like fish goes bad. I'm really of two minds about this because I understand that they have a budget and they do all their own shopping yeah. and yada, yada, yada. But like it is entirely out of their hands if their produce goes bad. And it might be bad storage, like, or I yeah. don't know.
I feel like in her case, she should have smelled it at the grocery store. Like maybe she didn't check it before they wrapped it up.
They could have gone bad overnight.
They could have, but I think that's less likely than she probably just didn't. I don't know how likely that would be. Like I don't.
Interesting.
In this circumstance, my read of it was that she probably just bought bad scallops and didn't check them when she bought them.
Interesting. Well, I mean, then, you know, she's cooking the scallops and because they're bad, they're like leaching moisture out and she can't add any Oof, fat to the gross. Pan because it has to be healthy. Yeah, like, so she can't get a sear on them. So they're just sort of like soggy hockey pucks. And it just, her dish went really poorly. Everything went wrong with this dish. And like immediately the judges were like, uh-uh, this is not it.
Wolfgang Puck is like, what's the American word for dubious? And they're like, dubious.
Dubious. No, that's the right one. And we have Jonathan Waxman saying like, she should have just taken the scallop off the plate and said like, the healthy version is vegetarian.
Like, yeah, you know, I'm like of two minds of that. She was just in between a rock yeah. and a hard place. There was going to be no right answer here. Yes. And she would have been screwed if she did that too.
100% agree. Speaking of Wolfgang Puck, we actually need to pause for a moment because not only is he one of our absolute favorite guest judges in the Top Chef universe, but we also learned a tidbit about him during this judging panel, which was he was a judge on season 6. And he, after eating Kevin Gillespie's meal, was so impressed that he went to Atlanta to eat in Kevin's restaurant.
I love that. That was a really fun nugget. Yeah.
That just goes to show that he walks the fucking walk. He is not just like a camera persona. He was like, this man cooked such a good meal, I flew across the country to eat his food.
To go eat at his restaurant. That's so true.
It's incredible.
And then I like when Padma mentioned, yeah, because they're having a conversation about like their what they think memorable moments were. Uh-huh. Padma brings up when he threw a dinner roll or something like that.
And he was like, well, it was awful.
Yeah, it's funny that of every personality we see come on the show, Emeril was probably the most famous celebrity chef for the mm-hmm. longest, but he's very subdued on Top Chef. He almost doesn't see – you would not know that if nobody told me that Emeril had the career that he had as far as, like, TV chef.
Yeah.
It would not occur to me that that was the same person.
That's a good point. I mean, Emeril's kind of like a grandpa. Not, and I don't mean that in, like, he's old. Like, in that he's so sweet and, like, he's silly.
Yeah.
But he just, like, wants everyone to do well.
Yeah, yeah.
Emeril is an incredible presence on Top Chef.
Yeah. I kind of want to go watch old Emeril content.
I used to come home from school and watch Emeril.
Yeah.
Bam.
That was like in the era of Regis and Kathy Lee.
Yeah, like his show was like a daytime TV show, like live audience, huge kitchen setup. And he'd have like people come up from the audience and you'd be like, throw it in the pot. Like he was a very magnetic personality.
Yeah.
But I think obviously, you know, that's a like for TV, he really hammed it up. But my guess is that like in his restaurants and all that, like he is just an incredibly resolved
mm-hmm.
and like calming presence. I mean, his restaurants are like huge, like not huge in terms of size, but like they are just institutions is what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
And to do that, I think you need to have like an even keel attitude. that, which is why John Tizar does not. But moving on from Lizzie, we have Josh. So Josh had a season six moment where they had to go to an army base or an Air Force base. And we had Michael Voltaggio making pork belly.
Sorry, I just – to interject, this was not memorable to me.
Yeah, there are so many more memorable season six moments than this.
Even though we made a very funny meme about this particular episode from season six, so yes, just another plug to check out our Instagram, them working on the line, like serving up this meat, I guess it is memorable. It was like pretty funny, but yeah, I was like, of all season six, like this is what you picked?
What would you have picked for season six?
I'm still laughing about the wine angels.
Yes.
Or the Napa Valley train.
The Napa Valley train.
Something that was very quintessential to that season, either like the razzmatazz of Las Vegas.
Yes.
Or the fun finale in Napa.
Could not agree with you more.
Yeah.
Weird moment to pick, but I guess it was that good of a dish. I don't know. And so we have Josh doing pork. He's like, this is my redemption pork, eighth times the charm. And he makes a glazed pork tenderloin with smoked cashew puree and an heirloom peach garnish. This looked delicious.
Yeah, this sounds very good. I love pork with like a fruit.
I love peaches. Stone fruit is the best fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree.
Peaches, nectarines, plums. I'm not a huge cherry girl, but I'll eat them.
I'm into dried apricot.
Oh, you would be.
Would you say a date is a stone fruit, or is that like its own thing?
I
don't think it would be.
Are dates stone fruit? We could have left over it. Dates, mangoes, coconuts, green almonds, lychees, and olives are also technically classified as stone fruits, as are mulberries, blackberries, and raspberries. What?
Okay.
I think we're going to need to do a little follow-up on this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sensing some interesting facts about food.
That's like when the U.S. government made pizza a vegetable because it had tomato sauce or whatever. Yeah. I'll believe it when I see it. So, yeah, the judges also really liked this dish, too. So, back-to-back Top Chef love for this season six moment.
This dish went really well for him.
Brooke had a infamous moment from season seven. She had the sort of pea puree of
the stolen pea puree,
which you kind of – I balked at when they replayed that. I'm like, how do you possibly pull some shit like that? And then fast forward to later in this episode when we have the, you know, cook-off between John and Lizzie. Spoiler, we'll get to it. But I just was like, God, this asshole.
This fucking asshole. But yeah, so Brooke is like, I need to make a pea puree. So she does.
Also looked delicious. Also salmon. We got so much salmon in this show, man.
Oh, my God. I'm tired of it.
But, I mean, if there was ever a healthy choice meal on this table, salmon with pea puree and whatever, rice, I think. That's it. Moving right along, we had Kristen, who did Carla's
chicken pot pie.
Chicken pot pie from season 8.
Which, if I recall correctly, had like 10 sticks of butter in it.
Yeah.
Like, I think the whole joke of the episode was like, she's like, I'm not holding any punches on how unhealthy this dish is.
Oh, God, that was such a good season. That was such a good season.
It's such a good season. And Carla's on our Mount Rushmore.
She is.
She's actually the only one I can remember who we put on our Mount Rushmore. Yeah, she's just incredible.
You should read a lot into that. But yeah, and she did it without any butter or cream, and the judges still loved it. I did love that she had the workaround of, I'm just going to make the portion smaller, and that's how it's healthy.
Yeah.
I was like, I guess that works, yeah.
But even so, like, her dish on its own didn't seem too unhealthy, portion size aside.
Right.
She made a poached chicken breast with miso and herb gravy. I think there was, like, some tofu in there. They really applauded this dish. So creative. One of the plates didn't have sauce, which is something that sort of got breezed over.
Yeah.
But I guess the dish was that good that they were like, she's in the top for this one.
She a baddie. And then Micah had a moment. I had no idea. Did they even mention what his moment was? Season 9?
Oh, yeah. Heather Beverly. So for those who don't remember season 9, which it seems like is you, Bits, there's this like what I think is one of the nastiest feuds in Top Chef history.
Where was season 9 again? Remind me.
I think somewhere in Texas.
Oh, this was Dallas? The Texas season. Okay.
Yeah, it was Dallas. Honestly, that season 9 was a bit of a dud. Like, there was one clear front runner the entire season, and like no one could touch him. He went on to very soon after that, I think, get a Michelin star. Like, he was like cream of the crop, and everyone else was kind of just punks.
But yeah, they floated around Texas for this one, I remember. Yeah. Yeah. It's like when they do California.
There are these two women on the season, Heather and Beverly. And I think Beverly is at the beginning of the season a bit of a weak link. And Heather just like for some reason gloms onto Beverly and it's like pretty verbally abusive to her the entire season. Like it's not just confined to this episode, but in this episode that they're referring to, Heather and Beverly were paired together for a team challenge. And it's like incredibly difficult to watch. Like if you go on Top Chef Reddit, people are still talking about how difficult it is to watch this episode because it's just so mean. And it's like, it's not fun. It's not.
And it's Beverly. It's Heather being mean to Beverly.
Oh, weird. And they end up on the bottom and it's definitely both of their faults. Like Beverly's not innocent in it, but Heather also like messes up and it just leads to like, and everyone's like, Heather, chill out. Like you're being really mean. It's not fun to watch. I don't recommend going back to watch it. But it's definitely sort of burned in my brain as like this is definitely memorable for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, this season's kind of crazy because wasn't this the season that Edward Lee is on?
I don't remember.
And he comes back like a lot on Top Chef. I actually kind of thought he was like more famous. Like he was like of the level that he was would be a judge over like a competitor, but damn, I mean, I guess that was 13 years ago.
Was he on Top Chef?
Yeah, he was on this season, Edward Lee.
Damn. Okay, good to know. Well, anyway, don't go back and watch that season. It's really not a good one. But we have Micah having to recreate the dish that they made, which was a duck dish. So Micah makes a 5-spice duck breast with miso polenta and pickled cherries. Gets really good marks, well cooked. Cherries are a really nice choice. However, the miso and polenta combination, I think, left the judges a bit befuddled.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, but then we move to judges' table, and it's awesome. They pull out the top and the bottom all at once, and I love that.
Yes, so we're starting to mix up the formula. So keep them on their toes. And we have in the top, we have Josh, Brooke, and Kristen. Which is fabulous. And essentially they give praise to everyone. I didn't write down who won. Did Brooke win this one?
No, Kristen took it.
Oh, Kristen,
it was her pot pie.
Kristen's pot pie, even homey though flavors. She missed the sauce on one plate, she still won. That's how good that dish was.
Yeah.
You rarely see that type of exception being made.
I'm sure that because she just sort of subverted expectations for a pot pie – like, I think it was just, like, fun to eat something that was so of the flavor and yet lacked all of the sort of quintessential things about what makes pot pie good.
You know what I would equate this to? Buddha's in World All-Stars, the trompe l'oeil.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
One where it was like, oh, he fucking did the challenge.
Yeah.
Like, better than anyone.
Yes. Yes. I think she just, like, thematically – took the most interesting approach.
Yeah.
Granted, she had, and I mean, that's not to say that other people couldn't do that. I think that people that could have done something similar to Kristen, where they really subverted expectations of a rich, homey dish, were really going to just be the people that were working with a sort of reference meal that was
Like Stefan could have done it.
Yeah, Stefan
honestly,
is like a great one.
John Tizar could have done it. Here's the thing. With the risotto, like, you're going to fall into a trap. He should have, like, upended the expectations of a risotto because risotto is not healthy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He could have done something different, but he just made a risotto.
Yeah.
Kristen wins 15 Gs, 15 large. Now, quickly, a bit of an update on who has won money this season. It's essentially all Kristen. She has won a total of $35,000 so far this season. Wowza. And Micah has... $5,000. What is $5,000 after taxes? That's like maybe his rent.
Yeah, maybe it was like half that. Or
I wouldn't turn my nose up at winning $5,000. I need the listeners to hear. I'm just saying, compared to Kristen's 35, it's not looking like much.
And then we've got two on the bottom, only two, which I kind of thought was interesting, but I guess it's to do largely with the fact that we have a twist. It's twist time. So Lizzie and John find themselves on the bottom. Lizzie's, they just were like, yo, this scallop was gnarly. And she, to her credit, was so ashamed. She just, she's like, I know, I'm so sorry. John took the opposite approach.
I'm not making excuses, but I couldn't. However, here's my excuse.
And the pan wasn't, whatever.
Here's the thing. The reason why this didn't fly is he's looking at a table of his peers who know his bullshit.
Yeah, it's like, dude.
Ooh, this was embarrassing for him, honestly, because he's looking at these guys he's presumably known for most of his career, and they're just like, you're making a fool of yourself. Like, you look dumb right now.
Yeah.
And he just, he literally can't let up. He's like in full fight mode. Like, he has all of his defenses up. And anyway, so Padma says, remember this, in like a James Bond moment.
Doo-doo-doo.
With her 10th Kindle Fire tablet. And so Lizzie and John have to look at the 10th memorable moment, a memorable moment from their own season, and it's CJ's burger and pickles.
But CJ, why don't you just make a pickle? I mean, why don't you make a burger?
That was a really funny talking head. I liked it.
Yeah. And so the pickle burger is back. Lizzie and John, basically it's a cook for your life.
Lip sync for your life.
Make a burger for your life. They have to reimagine this dish in a healthy fashion. Lizzie goes the chicken burger route. John goes lamb burger. He puts a fried egg on it. And we get his bullshit yet again, where he asked to use some of her dill. He uses almost all of it. She picked up like a literal sprig of dill.
He's like, can I use this? And she said yes. And he's like, thanks, and takes the whole thing.
Yeah. And then he proceeds to go on about how I could have just taken all the pickles and said, this is Top Chef. And it's like, I mean, I guess you could have, but now we really – he just is like, what the fuck is your governing logic?
Real, I don't know how to say – no, I'm not going to say it like that. He was just giving like real basement dweller energy of like, I'm going to get you all one day.
Yeah, he was real serving up the ick this up. He served up a lamb burger with a side of ick. It was not good.
Well, I think the dish actually was good, which is annoying.
He kept leaving the oven open.
Yeah, it was so rude. He just
she was very sweet about it. She was like, hey, love, you mind if you close this? I like really want to learn my South African accent twice. I cook for my Nelson Mandela twice.
Yeah, he was just playing dirty in a time where it's like, that's not what this is about, dude. Like, you're focused on making a good dish. Focus on cooking your lamb correctly, because you didn't, and it sent you home.
Bye. Oh, it was so satisfying to see this man go, finally. This was
like when Kristen finally got fired from Sir. You know, like, just get him out of there.
Yes,
he's done enough.
Out. And don't give him a spinoff like you did, Kristen.
And he was so creepy in his like final talking. He's like, I could have just made a burger and held up a jar of pickles and said, this is Top Chef. Here are your pickles.
Yeah.
Like, what?
It was his eyes were like soulless while he's saying this too. The best zinger though of the whole episode is when we cut back to the stew room. Josh just goes, hopefully John can find a pan flat enough to cook a burger in. And I was like, boom, roasted. Oh my God, that was so satisfying. But I will say, it's funny because when that group of chefs, when the top folks come back into the room, there's still confusion amongst the people that are in the room because they don't know if they're in the bottom or what. And then so they start talking already, and Stefan's like, wait, so like, are we on the bottom? Like, what's going on? They're like, no, they're like cooking a burger to this, cooking CJ's burger. Crazy. Yeah. Oh, crazy. God. I actually just like love that he had to get humiliated twice before he was sent home. That was really nice.
It was a proper send off for John Teasley.
We're awful.
We are. Like,
whatever.
This man is like deeply troubled, and we're just like, he sucks. worse.
He's just so nasty to Lizzie, and Lizzie was so nice.
Yes, I agree. My namesake. Your namesake, yeah. What if I just start calling you Lizzie one day?
I go by Lizzie. That's what my family calls me.
I forgot about that.
They call me Lizzie Borden. What's left of them? Just kidding. Let's get off this thing.
Please. Ay, ay, ay. Okay, so Bits, John's risotto and burger. Would you eat that?
I wouldn't eat it out of spite.
Oh, okay. So it's going to be like that. I'd eat both of these dishes, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, you can have my serving.
I'll eat double.
I would send it back. I would eat it and then I would eat all of it but a bite, and then I'd send it back and say, I'm not paying for this.
Fine. I would do that too.
I actually sat by a woman once who did that. She ate like the whole – oh my God. This was on my honeymoon. So we're sitting by the pool. She orders like a pizza to the poolside. This is like in rural Greece. It's like, okay, so manage your expectations for what this pizza will taste like. She orders a pizza that you could get with pancetta or without. She eats – I watch her. She eats the whole pizza. And then there's like maybe a slice left, and the person comes over to ask how everything is, to like pick up the plates. And she's like, I actually didn't order this pizza, so I don't think I should pay for it. And they're like, what do you mean? And she's like, I ordered with the pancetta, and this one didn't come with pancetta. And the twist in all of this is that she actually did, but the pancetta was like under the cheese and she didn't notice it, but she had dug in too deep, and then it was super uncomfortable, but I was loving every second of it.
Damn.
Yeah, so there are people like that. It's weird.
Couldn't be me.
Unless we're in this made up scenario of would I eat this food.
Okay, Bits, do we have an update on where John Tizar is now?
Oh my God, we don't.
Let's leftover it for next episode.
Let's leftover it.
Okay, fabulous. So next episode, we're going to find out where he is. So then I guess this brings us to a judgy table. Do you want to go first?
You got it.
Do I got it? I'm just going to – you know what? Yeah, I do got it. Okay. Nancy, your judgy table starts now. An egg on a burger is too fucking much. Mm-hmm. It is like, I know people like the Four Charles and the Au Cheval, like, and you know, they split the yolk and let it drip and all this stuff. Like, I'm not saying it's not good. It's too much. It's gilding the lily. It makes me feel sick. It is like so heavy. It's so rich. I was actually surprised that they didn't ding John more for like, that's fucking not healthy. I mean, I get that protein is healthy, whatever, but like, just, it's so, it makes you feel gross. Anytime I've eaten a burger with an egg, I leave and I'm like, I'm not eating for 5 days. Like, that's enough protein for now. Thank you very much. It also usually can be quite greasy. And especially if the yolk is overcooked, it is disgusting. Ay, ay, ay. Do not give me a burger with an egg on it. Thank you very much. I am done.
Yeah, I hard agree with that one. It is gilding the lily.
Burgers should just be plain. Like, not plain. They should have, like, yummy stuff on them. But, like, it doesn't need bacon. It doesn't need an egg. Like, that's too much.
It's too much.
It's too much. Okay,
too
baby G.
Too much. I don't have one.
Okay. Noted. I'm going to put that in your permanent record.
You know what? I do have one.
Oh, she's coming back from the dead. Okay, Bits, your judgy table starts now.
Healthy choice. Healthy choice frozen meals. Gross.
Gross.
Just gross. I get it. It's like easy, but if you want to have something that is like low effort, make like a box of pasta and sauce. I just think there's easier fast dinners than microwaving a frozen like little plastic saran wrapped piece of salmon and like soggy green beans. I just think it's gnarly. And frozen dinners, like, unless you're going like old school, like Michelangelo's like Alfredo or mac and cheese, like, I will say frozen mac and cheese, there's fire. Something really special to me about that. That is
Trader
like
Joe's
nostalgia.
Makes a great frozen mac and cheese.
Yeah, so let's keep that one safe. But everything else is like, if you're like defrosting a meal in a box that has like three components to it, I don't know, that like wigs me out. But I get it. I get why it exists. It's healthy, it's fast, but I just, I don't know, just like makes spaghetti and like a side salad.
Amen, sister. Also because like I'm not this person, but like the amount of like shit, like junk chemicals in those dish, like meals,
yeah,
has got to be more unhealthy than any pasta you're making at home.
But I will say, like, again, I recognize I'm very lucky. I have the time to like make myself food. I have enough skill to make myself food. I know that like cost wise. So I understand why. So maybe it wasn't the best judgy table, but it just, I don't know. It just tastes like a microwave.
I agree. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of our coverage of season 10, episode 9. Tune in next time for our coverage of season 10, episode 10. We're in the double digits.
Ooh, double dig, 10-10, make a wish.
Ooh, and it's Restaurant Wars.
Oh my God, is it really? Okay, my wish came true then. Perfect. Wow. Yeah,
dude, Restaurant Wars, this particular season is shock and awe. So get ready.
I'm locked in. All right, Nancy, I'll see you next time.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.